96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to the Doctors In, me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Welcome to another exciting show this Tuesday on Guardian Radio. Just getting a little feedback somewhere. Producer, if you can see where that feedback is coming from. But thank everybody for joining in. You know, we talk a lot about health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. So we have another exciting show to talk about a lot of different things. And I want to thank Medical Concierge Services, our sponsor, for all your medical healthcare needs. Check us out on Collins Avenue in the Heart Center, or what we call the Medical Pavilion, 326-1521 or 429-4880. That's our WhatsApp. And for all your medical needs, and check out our website, Medical Concierge Services. You can find us at mcsfamilymedicine.com, also on Facebook and on Instagram. And that's where we do all of our good work, in clinic and visits. So check us out and find out more. Tonight we have a really interesting show. People have been asking me all kinds of questions as this pandemic is being going on about the healthcare system and what's going on in general. And, you know, when I was in the union, I would talk a lot more about specifically about what's going on. But as I faded out of that, I don't touch on it as much. So I thought the best person to come would be someone who's involved, who's working every day, who's kind of in the action of it all and trying to keep things together. And so I invited a colleague of mine, a family physician, a consultant at PHA, and the president of the Consultants Association. So I want to welcome to the show. And are you there, Dr. Pindut?
Can you see me?
Yes, I thought you were frozen. So for all of you joining tonight, we've got Dr. Sabrika Pinder-Butler. She's here with us tonight. We're going to talk about a lot of interesting things. We're going to talk about the state of the public healthcare institutions, what's going on with how we're engaging with the Ministry of Health, what's going on with COVID, and then kind of looking as we go into this election season, what we should be doing and rounding it off, of course, we always about prevention. How do we stay safe with all this that's going on? I know there's a lot of fear. You know, people are getting sick. People have died. And we all want to know the best way to keep ourselves safe. And so we have to keep on with that educational component just so that we're all doing the best that we can. Welcome to the show. You've been here before, so you're like a friend of the show. So I just want to welcome you back.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Archer Cartwright. It is my pleasure to be here and to speak with the Bahamian people, as there's so much that's happening in the country right now and has been happening with us since we've been fighting this COVID battle from last year, March.
Okay, so I also want to give a shout out to those who are watching online. I see you, Ms. Sweeting, Esalula, Vanessa Colby, everybody who's online with us tonight. We should have a really exciting show. You recently did an interview, Dr. Pinder Butler. You kind of went into this whole idea of just what's kind of happening. And so I think the big overarching thing, people see what's happening on the news. They see the state of the hospital. They see the state of health in general in the nation. What is really going on and how did we get here?
So, unfortunately, a lot of what we're seeing happening now, in part, is due to some of the health system challenges that we had prior to COVID. We knew that we had challenges with our some infrastructural things. We knew that we had deficits or shortages of healthcare workers, physicians, as well as nursing staff. And so as we were thrust into this COVID pandemic, which was new to everyone, we found that our system was becoming overwhelmed with what was happening with the COVID cases, which I think everyone in the country and in our nation should know now. We are overwhelmed with cases. Our numbers continue to increase. We have had an alarming amount of deaths recently. I think almost every home may have been touched, or at least knows someone who has perhaps had COVID and or even died recently, more than what we were seeing last year. And so at this particular point, we're really at a critical state. I think we're at the state that we feared we would end up at if this pandemic did not get under control. We're at the state where our hospital is overwhelmed with cases. There's no space. Patients just trying to accept patients for COVID and non-COVID cases, other emergencies is a challenge. We've had to stop other services, you know, such as the specialty child clinics, you know, certain oncology care, certain surgical services. We're not able to support them because we don't have the staff to allow for this now that we're dealing with what we've been managing before COVID and then the COVID surge. We're seeing challenges as well in our clinics. Patients are coming all the time. They're fearful. Sometimes you don't know that they actually have COVID until after you've seen them. So their staff is continuing to happen. So, you know, unfortunately, as we said, what you're seeing in the community with these overwhelming cases is what you're also seeing with our healthcare. So we're really, really struggling. The healthcare team is fatigued, burnt out, probably beyond being burnt out. And it seems as if things are not going to get any better right now at the moment. We pray that it does. But from what we're seeing, we continue to battle. Every day I'm getting calls. Physicians are overwhelmed. We can't take people in. Families are calling. They don't know what to do. Families who've lost their loved ones are in despair because we know that we even have a challenge with the morgue. So it is really, really a sad time, I think, and for Bahamians right now as we press through what's happening in our healthcare institutions.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And you mentioned that, you know, this didn't just start. We've been having serious problems with our healthcare system for some time. It's been over a year. There's been a lot of suggestions that have been made. We've talked, I know you talked with the government. We talked about the issues with capacity, the issues with infrastructure, resources. Why haven't those things been tackled when we have been kind of discussing the fact that there'd be a third, maybe even a fourth wave? Why we still seem to be where we were almost over a year ago? I don't know if Dr. Pinder went out a bit. We're just going to wait for her to come into the system. It seems
that. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I can hear you.
So, you know, we talked about this. We talked about the resources. We've been talking about fixing A&E. We've been talking about creating new spaces. But we seem to still be kind of where we started when we said, hey, we need to lock down so we can kind of figure this out, get it together, and expand some things. Did we make the type of changes that we needed? Like, why are we still kind of where we are from the very beginning?
I think part of the challenge is that we identified the challenges because we knew that we had challenges prior to this. I think even when we have hurricanes, we realize the challenge. Certainly with with our staff and certainly with our healthcare spacing challenges, infrastructural challenges. And, you know, the CPSA made recommendations from last year. We continue to make recommendations as well and suggestions because we're on the ground. We continue to advocate for more space and for different things to occur. And for planning, I think perhaps what happened is when we saw numbers decreasing, which perhaps was the time for us to continue with the movement of ensuring that we had certain things, things just seemed to have fallen flat. You know, we asked, we know that the ministry perhaps has been overwhelmed with dealing with this. And certainly we know that we had a switch of ministers as well during this time, which might have also been a challenge. But it seemed as if not much was happening. A lot of the things that we recommended, even related to the protocols, appear to have been falling on deaf ear. And so while it was that we were in a state of lower numbers and, you know, praying that things would remain, we were also watching intently at what was happening in other countries, because we saw that even though there seemed to have been quieter times, shortly thereafter, we would have other waves occurring. So we knew that that would occur, and we hoped that we would have been planning to make sure that we had things in place so we wouldn't be so reactionary. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. So we're still at the same place. We were still, you know, in the midst of a pandemic, fighting for the government to bring staff back. I mean, we were letting people go during a crisis, which was unbelievable. You know, it just was disappointing, to say the least, that a lot of these things that we hoped would be enacted didn't happen. At one point, we had recommended perhaps looking at utilizing a gymnasium or another offsite center outside of the hospital. So we would try to limit as much as possible, because we know that we also have staffing challenges. So we appreciate that. But at least to try to limit the COVID and the non-COVID exposures as much as possible. But I think we just waited too late. We moved too slowly. And that is something that we really need to work on as a nation, and certainly in health. You know, we have to continue to plan and be progressive so that we...
And proactive. I think the key is being proactive. I think, and what I gather is when there was that lull, when there was that comfortable moment when we started opening up and the numbers were low, we were looking pretty good. There seemed to be a lot of celebration. And it wasn't a sense of, hey, you know, this thing is unpredictable. We're seeing that it seems quite cyclic. We know how viruses go up and down. Should we be prepared for the next wave? And they were speaking to it, but I think there was a great excitement on things getting a little bit better. And perhaps we missed an opportunity to have the things in place that we really need as we go into what seems like the worst cycle that we've had so far.
I would definitely agree with you from that standpoint. The country, when we relaxed a lot of our travel restrictions, certainly when we reopened and we removed some of the testing measures and we removed some of the quarantine measures as well, you know, it's important to have a balance when you do that, to make sure that your surveillance and monitoring system is robust enough to manage that. And I don't think that we did that. So that also contributed to what we know occurred in terms of the increase in cases that we certainly have seen in country and continue to see, because we know it happens. And so, which is why we were, you know, continuing to get the message out as much as possible. Let's please be wise about what we're doing. Let's not, you know, remove all of the testing. Let's be in so quickly. We know that this is novel. There's new, not, you know, no one knows enough about it. So we can't just get our guards down.
I would say, Dr. Binder, what I'm seeing is a lot of, you know, these statements that are coming out when we know that this is a fluctuant situation. And I think that's where the comfort comes through. We saw the policy, and I've been very vocal about this, when we allowed vaccinated persons to come into the country untested, only to find out. And I think a lot of us who were keeping up with the data, we saw this coming. We kind of were very guarded about that particular change in policy. I know there's an economic component to it as well, but the fact is, just slowly afterwards, the data became mainstream that, you know, everybody still is at risk, and we need to be more cautious in how we policy, knowing that we don't know all the information. Would you concur, being a consultant, and you know, we're both consultants, and you being the president of the Consultants Association, Physicians Association, would you say that your recommendations were taken on as much? Did you see the type of things and changes that you would have liked to have seen as you were going along with the progress of all of this?
Unfortunately, we did not feel that the recommendations that we made were taken as seriously as they should have been, and certainly not in a timely fashion. So yes, while we appreciate that certain things did come to play, but they came in after the fact. You know, we've been agitating for certain things not to happen because we could see what was down the road. And to be the ones that are responsible for healthcare in the country, is certainly in our public health institution, healthcare institutions, and to know what this could potentially mean to us working on the ground, with us not being able to provide the best standard of care that we want to the Bahamian public. I mean, it was just heartbreaking that a lot of those things that we certainly felt would have better protected us, and certainly I feel would have allowed us to have, you know, perhaps less of what we're seeing now as it relates to this overwhelming surge and the death and severe illness related to COVID-19, you know, we really, really felt that we missed a lot of things. We don't, it is that the Ministry of Health did not properly engage us and did not seek to seriously consider our recommendations and pass those on to the competent authority. We continued, I think we've had several press statements out. You know, I think I've been speaking with persons in media more than I have in my entire life. It's not certainly not something I ever thought I would be doing at this stage, but at the end of the day, when we're talking about life and death, okay, that is serious business. We don't just work in the healthcare institutions, we're also patients. Our family members are patients, our friends are patients, our loved ones. So we don't want to see any harm done that we can try to prevent as much as possible. And then we also have other patients, you know, patients who need healthcare that they can't access. And that is really troubling, because we know too that early on, when we saw what would be happening with the COVID pandemic, if you're not able to access care, those persons too can end up being seriously ill and can also die because they can't access the care. And that's very concerning.
That is a great point. Last year when I was doing the show, I looked at some early kind of data analysis of what people thought was going to happen due to not just COVID, but also COVID policies, lockdowns, and all these different things. And they were assessing from very early that we would lose more life years in our policies in terms of locking down and changes in the economy than we would with COVID itself, more so because of what you mentioned. The cancer patient not getting treatment, diabetics who are out there in the community just kind of, you know, doing whatever. All of these chronic diseases that had been lingering in our society for some time. And basically, people were going in and having to frequently see their doctor already. Yes. We have a lot of persons with multiple comorbidities. And to have those people not being able to access care, there are surgeries that are way behind you. And something that might have been a small problem now be a bigger problem. Do you see it as a major impact here? I see it as a major impact.
I think it's major.
I think that we should have had a COVID hospital somewhere where we can focus on that, and we can still maintain looking at patients with chronic diseases.
It certainly is a major challenge, because as you know, patients who should have had procedures from last year, and they still haven't been able to have them done because, you know, they might have been booked when there was the lull and then things changed. And so they can't access the care. You know, it's just, it's very, very sad. You know, persons who really need to see physicians who cannot access private care. They're still waiting for clinics to reopen. And certainly, you know, when we see that these things can lead to worsening, of these persons' conditions. So what is now something that can be dealt with as an elective or as a scheduled or a planned time can now be something that turns into an emergency. And then certainly at this time with Whitwell, knowing that, you know, A&E is bombarded with COVID cases, we've had so many exposures in hospital to healthcare workers. We certainly have had patients who might have been exposed as well while receiving care, just because we have so many people that are in the hospital. You don't know if the person who's right. seeking the care has COVID, who's there next to you. And so all of this right now is certainly something that is frightening and should be frightening for all of us in this country. And we really, you know, I think of nothing else, I really want us to stress and for everyone to understand, we are in a beyond a critical state of healthcare in our institutions. Our hospital is swamped, is you know, when it is that we know that we're having patients from the family islands and we're trying to delay because we don't have space for them, we can't accept them. You know, that is absolutely concerning.
And that's affecting quality of care. And I think at the end of the day, we know what effects on quality of care lead to poor outcomes.
It does.
I think I'm hoping and I'm wishing that we are doing some studies or looking at these numbers to see, you know, where the ball was dropped, where these things are happening. And I think engagement is extremely important in order to really bring in all the players to get an assessment of what really needed to be done. Because I know the persons up top have to be exhausted right now. They have to be overwhelmed. Yes. And change in the engagement that's going on.
I will say that there has been some changes from the administrative level of the hospital. And PHA certainly has continued to engage as much as possible within reason. And when we reach out, we do get response. The challenge has been from the level of the ministry in general. A lot of things are just very slow. We've been asking for meetings now for months, sending communications every month, reminding, and no response or a response of a meeting that never happens, you know, a meeting that is canceled right before the meeting. And I think too, you know, what as healthcare providers, the fact that we are working as hard as we can, certainly it was a scary time for a lot of people, and it might still be a scary time for others who are working in the midst and knowing that, you know, you want to provide the best healthcare. You don't want patients to die. You're trying your best to save lives, and things are still happening, and you yourself are at risk. You yourself has contracted COVID and potentially has even passed it on to family members. We know that we've lost physicians. We know that we've lost nurses and other healthcare workers. So it is not a good time. And so to not be properly engaged, to not have the communication, to not have the respect by your leaders, and to only learn about things when you see a national address, that's just unacceptable. You know, yes, we know to the honorariums and things that should have been rightfully given to the healthcare workers that were promised from, I think, last year or so. You know, we appreciate that things happen, but talk to us. Let us communicate. Let us know what is happening. We shouldn't, again, be seeing things out in social media and then, you know, no one is coming to try to rectify the situation in a timely fashion. It's just not appropriate. It's disrespectful.
Speaking of the honorariums, people have been talking about this online. They put a negative spin on it. You know, why are healthcare workers, you know, worrying about money in this kind of time and stuff like that? you know, they really want to know what's going on. What are the issues in terms of the specific, like any information that you have on how that kind of rolled out and what was the problem? We saw some people were actually striking. They weren't doctors, but we know that a lot of doctors haven't even received the honorarium and we've kept on working. But like, what is going on with that? What is the reasoning or the thought process or the issues? Because people are looking negatively on healthcare workers, even though these are the same people that have basically been working for over a year and a half, saving lives, putting themselves at risk. At one point, they were working, some of them were working out of hotels and different places to ensure that there was coverage for people at different levels and different stages of COVID. What kind of insight could you bring to that?
So, yes, we know that many healthcare workers working more hours than they probably have worked in their entire lives through this COVID pandemic. The risk that you have put to yourself and your family as it relates to exposure certainly perhaps is beyond what we have seen and perhaps maybe what we may see for a very long time. And so, you know, I applaud the health workers that have been working tirelessly throughout this time. I know that sometimes people don't appreciate all that goes into what we do. You know, when we're short staff and you have to sometimes be the clerk, you have to sometimes be the porter, you have to sometimes do everything, but you do that to try to make sure that the patients are cared for. So, you know, sometimes it's difficult to appreciate that when at that moment your main focus is to receive care. And so I understand that as well from a patient perspective. At that moment, especially if you're coming in as in an emergency state, you just want the care. You're not thinking about what else goes into Dr. Archer Cartwright's day if no one else showed up and she's the only person that has been working and covering for 2 days. You know, you're not seeing that. But a lot of our healthcare workers have really been stressed out during this time and trying to do what we know, because certainly if we know that we've been short-staffed from before, we've been trying to and continue to try to pull this together to make sure that we provide the best care that we can. And so certainly last year when there were discussions about persons who would volunteer to work directly with COVID persons, in the first instance, that was an initiative that was taken out, and there were funds offered to persons as an incentive, because we, again, in other countries, that was the standard as well, because we know that persons were certainly putting themselves at risk and their family members. And then by extension, because now we had seen that, you know, Corona was not only just limited to specific patients, almost everyone in the healthcare was impacted by seeing patients who had COVID. And then we realized that some patients we didn't even know had COVID. So again, physicians, everybody was exposed.
I think all healthcare workers exposed to patients are frontline workers.
Absolutely.
That's my view on that. Because you don't know who's coming through the door. As someone who works in the clinics, we were sometimes one of the first persons to actually see these COVID patients because they would show up at the clinic. And you had to do the assessment, decide, is this a person who may have COVID or not? Yes. As it went on, you know, and other than the people who were showing up as emergencies, the clinical workers, the frontline doctors were the ones who were really seeing these patients come through and then saying, hey, look, you look like you have COVID. You need to go to this place or you need to go take a test. And so we have no idea of the exposure level of healthcare workers on all levels.
No. And so certainly that is why as well, the incentive to provide an honor for a token to persons who had been providing the care in the fight had been announced from the Ministry of Health. There should have been payments, I think, from between August or again in December. There were different discussions as to when it would happen. Nonetheless, we're in 2021. Okay, and a decision was finally made from the ministry to provide some funds. I think where the biggest challenge became is that there were, you know, we have physicians who work broadly under Ministry of Health and the Department of Public Health, and we also have healthcare workers who work under the Public Hospitals Authority. And in the first instance, there were payment of funds, and it was only to one subset, and that would have been persons from the Ministry of Health and the Department of Public Health. And so persons that were under the Public Hospitals Authority did not honorarium. Subsequently, there was some payments to a small number of persons from the Public Hospitals Authority. And even now to date, we're still trying to iron that out, still trying to look at who will be receive a payment or not. We're told that there perhaps may not have been sufficient funds even allocated for it, which again is, you know, is disappointing, especially when you know that there would have been others who were, you know, we're all in healthcare who would have received pay, and the persons working in the hospital
they're the ones who are working extremely hard and seeing the very severe cases, as well as the doctors who are out at South Beach Clinic, which are actually a lot of PHA workers.
Yes, so, they are.
I'm glad that the public health work, but to kind of miss out those persons who are really kind of in the thick of it, quite interesting. Why do you think it happened?
I honestly do not know. I hope that there was some, you know, I would like to think that it was not intentional. I do not see the purpose of why it would have been. All I know is at this point, you know, we need to fix it. Yes, you know, we're prepared to hold on and do what we need to do when it's not just about the money, because we're here to save lives. But at the end of the day, we should still be able to show some sort of due to persons who are still holding on, despite the challenges, because a lot of them have still not been rectified. And, you know, for that not really doesn't set a good feeling for the healthcare workers at this time. And so that is where things are with that, Dr. Archer Cartwright.
Yeah. So I would like to just give a recommendation. I think, you know, from what I remember from negotiations, risk allowance had been removed from a lot of healthcare workers. I think either replace that risk allowance across the board or increase it and just make that something that's just a part of it, because, you know, people are working in and out every day. They're coming in and out. Yes, it's their job, but we know that this is an extreme case. And I think it only makes sense that we channel that money into our healthcare workers who are going above and beyond and show them that appreciation.
And
I think that's definitely something that just should have been done, because as you said, in the United States and other places, you know, a lot of them were giving their healthcare workers so much money that they actually turned some of it down. That was their approach with it, knowing what was going on. They were like, here, we know what's going on. And they were like, hey, you know, we're so appreciative that you even thought about us, that they didn't even accept all of the money. And so we are fighting a whole different case. So we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on with COVID and our status and where we are as a country. I have with me Dr. Pinder Butler of the Physicians, the Consultant Physicians Association, with me here tonight. And so we'll be right back after the break. Come back and be here with us.
Tips for keeping children healthy. Ensure that children are up to date with their vaccinations, including the flu vaccine. Make sure that your children practice proper hand washing. Teach them to cover their nose and mouth with tissue or the inner elbow when coughing or sneezing. Encourage them to keep their hands away from their eyes, nose, and mouth. Explain that they should keep their distance from persons who are coughing and sneezing. Keep your children home when they are sick.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
When I had got prostate cancer, my family didn't know if I was going to live at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Within days, I got an appointment. They presented me with treatment options, and they set up a robotic prostatectomy. When my scans came back, there were no signs of cancer. They don't see you as a number. They see you as a part of family. I'm going on with my life. That's a real gift.
Call us at Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Morning blend business.
The economy.
Finance.
Business.
Industry.
Government sector.
Private sector.
Financial services.
Tourism.
Personal finance.
Investing advice.
Consumer issues. Consumer rights.
Trends and business opportunities.
Morning Blend Business. Free day from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
To the doctor's in with me, Dr. Dinotha Archer. I don't know, we have a little feedback, producer, whenever you cut the music. So just whatever that may be. But welcome back, everybody, to the doctor's in with me, Dr. Dinotha Archer, family medicine consultant. We're here tonight and we're talking about the state of public health institutions, what's going on, engagement, and what's happening with COVID at the moment. So I have with me, of course, Dr. Sabrika Pinder-Butler. She is the president of the CPSA, which is the Consultant Physicians Association. And we've been discussing all of this. We had a question to go online. I think they wanted to know, where to go? Ms. Sweeney asks, can we say that this was a result of mismanagement or was this, okay, I don't know. That's a little controversial. We don't really get into politics here, but they say, can we say that this is a result of mismanagement? Was this a political ploy? I think they just want to know that, you know, did things just really go wrong or, you know, this is just how things were handled. I guess that's the best way to take it so I could pull some of the politics out of it. I don't want to get to the politics.
I will say, you know, I think that one of the challenges, and I would have said this before, that we have sometimes as it relates to how we manage things in this country has to do with communication and being able to appreciate the views and recommendations, in particular of ground. Unfortunately, we see it all the time in this country. And if you speak to people in different sectors, in tourism, in education, you know, BPL, everywhere, we're having the same cry. You know, you're making the recommendations, but somehow the top is not listening to the middle and the bottom, and that's a disconnect. And so we have to be able to appreciate and respect the views and put them together so that we, you know, we work our institutions, whether it's health or whether it's education, in at the best that we can do it. And I think that's one of our biggest challenges. I don't think that it was political. I think it was just a matter of us not being able to properly engage our teams and, you know, to take the cues from the persons who are on the ground floor. And at the end of the day, coming out to manage these patients who are there, you need to take the cues from right. The people on the ground.
It's that heavy kind of top-down approach where you're not engaging those who are really actively involved. I agree with you. I think we see this in various sectors of our society where it's just kind of like, I've been put in charge and this is it. And we see things spiraling out of control and we won't reach out to just open that up to other persons so that they can help. I think we need to realize as a society that, you know, it's not all about sometimes self or personal issues or just the way that you are used to running things. But we have to be more open and communicate more, as you said, with each other, because communication allows you to see different perspectives.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, different perspectives, I think more now as a people, we have to be able to appreciate those differences. I may not support your view, you may not support mine, but we have to look at it from an intelligent view, be able to critique it, and then find a middle ground. But it can't be that once it's coming from Dr. Archer Cartwright, and I feel that my perspective is the end all and be all, that we don't incorporate that, you know, because that harms us at the end of the day. And it's not a progressive thing. And we have to be progressive as a people.
And it's not science. So science is very open to possibilities. Science is seeking the truth and not a particular truth. So you don't want to look at one perspective. You want to examine them all. You want to study those. You want to analyze. And you want to come up with the best out of all of those things to move forward. And you might have multiple pathways to achieve certain things. And it might be a multidisciplinary approach that's needed. So I think also having these conversation things, not communicating into different areas and realizing how those things connect, is a very big problem as well when we look at our planning and our strategy in things like this. This was something big. This needed a big team, a multifactorial team, people
Absolutely.
From so many different areas and different layers of the system in order for this to work well. And we see that the countries around the world that did kind of have a what we call a good response, where things flowed a lot easily, were these kind of countries that were already doing things in that particular way. This was culturally a part of them to kind of sit down, analyze, plan, and have, you know, so many different areas connected. We are ranked at 179 out of 180 in terms of recovery in the world statistics. Countries like Haiti are above us. Countries, even Sweden, as I talked about Sweden, their approach, and they were like, hey, we're not locking down, we're not doing anything. They even apologized about, you know, the elderly persons and not taking their risk into consideration. They're number 32. We're 179 with all that's been happening. So at the far extreme of Sweden, who said, hey, we're not going to do anything, the Bahamas is 179. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Pinderbutler?
Certainly, that's not a good place to be at. I think that is clear. However, I think that, you know, in all things, we must give thanks. And in all things, we have to learn from what we're presently experiencing and try to move forward. Because at the end of the day, we're not out of the pandemic by no stretch of the imagination. And I think, you know, we're actually at the peak of perhaps what might be our worst. So we have to learn from the mistakes that we've made and be able to move our trajectory very quickly so that things aren't worse. And, you know, so for me, I think that's really what we need to focus on, not where we are placed, but what do we need to do to make things better? And so, you know, we continue to talk about personal responsibility. You know, I continue to impress upon persons every day who say to me, well, you know, I'm waiting on the competent authority to tell us this. I'm waiting on.
No.
Listen, you don't need to wait on anyone.
Exactly.
You don't wait on anyone to tell you how to spend your money, how to save your money, when to go to the doctor, when to do all these things, when something is wrong with you. You don't do that. You do what is necessary. So at this time, especially when we're in a crisis and, you know, there are a lot of people who want to do things. And, you know, I don't know if we're using it as an excuse because, you know, again, you have to know your people. A lot of us like to use certain things as a way to delay what we know and to put the blame, but we have to take personal responsibility. So you don't go to the large gatherings. You don't mix. You wear your mask. You don't need anyone to tell you that. You know, you're reading. And so, you know, that's one of the things. So even as a family medicine physician, we always talk about making sure you empower people, teaching them how to educate themselves, read and see what's going on in the rest of the world so that you can also be informed and be a part of the decision-making process. So yes, we knew that, you know, you get vaccinated, but there's still a potential that you could transmit disease. We all knew that. We all said it. So again,
some people aren't taking that in. I know there's something going on, some type of dissonance or something like that. And I think that's why we have to be careful to know that, you know, this is a very real time experience. Like, things are happening in real time. Yesterday, it's not that way tomorrow. And so people aren't hearing that. I think a lot of people took from the vaccine, you know, I take the vaccine, I'm out of it. We heard the competent authority tell people like, hey, you're done. Yeah. And here we are, knowing that we're all in the fight, still here together. I think it's a time that we should not be dividing people. You talked about different perspectives. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of chatter of, you know, who's vaccinated, who's not vaccinated. I tell my patients, because I have both vaccinated and unvaccinated, you know, it's all about risk. It's all about information. It's about making an informed decision and being accountable for your own health, because there are certain things that we have to do to protect ourselves and to protect others. But there should be no fighting, because this is something that's changing constantly. We're getting data every single day. And I think it's important to educate people more so than to divide people.
Yes. And so I absolutely agree with a lot of what you said. I think, you know, oftentimes one of the things I think that stuck with me most when we have had our press conferences and even when Dr. Dal Regis spoke is, if nothing else, she often reminded us that, you know, we don't know enough about the corona. The book is still being written. And that always stays in my mind. The book is still being written. So when you know that the book is still being written on something, then you need to be very precautious. And so I agree in part. I think sometimes too, our people got mixed messages, you know, from the competent authority, perhaps, and others, when there was, you know, the vaccination campaign first was rolled out and, you know, persons were looking for a way out. You know, I understood the COVID fatigue is real. You know, so this is the hope. This was the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm now going to be able to not have to wear this mask.
We'll just wake up and it's all going to be
correct. And that's what happened. And so, you know, it was a bit dangerous for us not to ensure that we say, hey, hold on. Even though, yes, we're encouraging you to get the vaccines, please still wear your mask. Please still social distance. Please still try to avoid the gatherings, because we don't know enough about what's going to happen. And we know that the potential for the virus to be transmitted still remains. So I think that would have been the best thing for us to do, but certainly, and not just in the Bahamas, we saw it on other, you know, platforms or in other countries, it was the same thing. So I think that's in a sense caused a lot of the breakdown. And we even see now in a lot of countries who have had, you know, great success with their vaccination campaigns and who might be having challenges with numbers again with COVID. It's again, because of the same thing. They relaxed restrictive measures too soon. And so again, because we know that it could be transmitted, the numbers have increased. Take home message, I think, is again, vaccinated or unvaccinated, you have to still follow the measures until such time. Wear your mask, sanitize, wash your hands, avoid the gatherings. Those things are essential. We know they work.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were happy to just kind of put that burden on the vaccine and be done with it, like you say.
Yes.
And this being an active, ongoing thing, we have to still remember, as we learn more about the vaccines, as we learn more about COVID, as we learn more about the cycling of how this is turning out, variant, that we still have to be vigilant. We still have to be keeping up with our hand washing and, you know, the hygienic part of it seems to be. And in fact, studies show that is probably the most likely thing to stop you from getting COVID.
Absolutely.
Beyond everything else. Hygienic practices, as well as your risk factors that we know about, are the things that are really going to keep you super safe. And so everybody has to keep in mind that we're not completely out of this and we're kind of working through this.
No. And oftentimes too, we like, you know, we want to make sure I remind everyone to please take care of your health. Make sure, you know, if you know that you have underlying health conditions like your diabetes and high blood pressure, which we know rampant in the Bahamas, we know that we have challenges with overweight and obesity in our country. We know that. Let's try to really take care of ourselves now more than others, because we know those risk factors put us at a higher chance of having, you know, severe illness and even death. So we have to take care of ourselves, you know, build up your immune system, make sure you get rest, exercise, eat properly, try to reduce your stress level. All of those things are absolutely important, and especially your mental health. In this whole time, people are so anxious, and I understand it. Between the work, the fear of the COVID, and then it also seems like we're losing a lot of people, even from non-COVID matters, almost every day. It's almost like death is a norm now. You know,
there's a lot of death, and I think it's a combination of both COVID, and now we're seeing with those initial policies of not being able to access health. I think that's what we're really seeing now, and that's why it seems like so many people are dying, because big factors, high glucose, not your diabetes not being controlled, hypertension, obesity, these are really big risk factors for COVID. So I think all of that is kind of mixed together, and we're seeing kind of like the pinnacle of this right now, where we're seeing the outcomes of everything that's happened. And so I tell my patients, optimize. That's the number one thing. If you have comorbidities, if you have obesity, if you have anything else going on, you need to optimize your health. That is important. Absolutely. Build your immune system. And then, of course, your hygienic practices and being vigilant about where you are, who you're around. You know, keeping your circle small still.
Absolutely.
Big parties.
Absolutely.
Right now. Definitely.
Absolutely.
So even though I have a slightly different perspective, you know, there is definitely, COVID is out there. COVID is real. And people need to take their health in hand and realize that you do have some responsibility to what happens to you as a part of it. We want to just talk a little bit too now. Promotions of the protocols we have election coming up now. And I'm going to open the phone lines first, and then we can just kind of touch into a little bit of what we should be doing as we go along, because this is going to be another thing, and not on a political aspect of elections, but the health aspect of what's going on with more things happening with this type of season. I don't think I've seen quite an outline of how this is going to take place. It's been very quiet, but that is something to consider. So if you have something to comment, you have a question for us, or Dr. Pinder, you want to give me a call, 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. Give us a call, 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. And we're just talking about the state of public health and health in general in the country, and COVID and what's happening and what you need to be aware of. Are there any protocols in place as we move into this election season? And do you have expectations for there to be like a national plan?
At this, I guess we would have all heard the Prime Minister in his address. I think he spoke with us twice in recent days, reiterate the preventative health measures in general. And so to date, that is all that I'm aware of that has been. I've not seen anything in print, but certainly I definitely think it's most important for all of us in this country to please bear those things in mind, avoiding the crowds at all costs, no large gatherings, wearing your masks. You know, we're a very touchy-feely bunch of people, for lack of a better word. That's what we do. This is a tourist destination. We smile, we talk. That's what we do. So maybe too, that's why it's a little bit harder for behavior places where, you know, they're not as friendly or as hospitable as we are. So for them to do that, it's a challenge. For us, it seems as if we're not being ourselves. So you have to make a concerted effort not to hug, not to touch, not to talk to someone. But it's more important now than ever for us to do that. We know that the variants that are here are very easy to be passed on. You may not know that the person next to you has COVID. And unfortunately, too, we know people who have COVID and they still out and about. I don't understand why we're still doing that in this day and time.
Let me tell you something, and I'm going to bring this up on national radio for this purpose, because I've had quite a few patients. So I do a lot of, I tell people, as soon as you get the thing that says that you have COVID, talk to your doctor. So people call me. And I start very early with prevention and kind of, following, because I don't want them in hospital. I want them to be able to manage outside. And so far, we've been really successful with that. And this seems to be an issue with surveillance. Not so much, I think, the people with surveillance, but something to do with their protocol. So a couple of things I found happened. One, I had a client go to, I won't say the lab's name, but that lab was not registered with the ministry. And so here the person was waiting to hear from someone from surveillance, and no one from surveillance called because they were unaware of that person had even tested positive. So only the labs that are verified are sending information in. So people are being missed. So no one, if they had not contacted me and said, Dr. Archer, I think I'm positive, or should I go do the test and come back to me? And I say to them, your family need to be quarantined. You need to stay in for, so much amount of time. They would have had no kind of guidance. And so people are like getting these tests and not getting any follow-up. The other thing was that people were also getting antigen tests done and taking that positive and hiding away at home or being out and about and not really going and getting the PCR. So I think some education, some communication, something is happening. I don't know, because they seem to be a little bit more aggressive earlier on, but there seem to be some gaps here where people are not being required to quarantine or stay at home or given that information.
What I think might be happening, we kind of spoke to this and had given considered, CPSA to give a heads up related to the recommendations in particular, because, when we're dealing with COVID last year, I don't think our system was as overwhelmed as it is now. We didn't have as many things going on. We didn't have the vaccination now going on, which also, takes away from the staff. So, some of the same staff members who perhaps were involved in the surveillance may have been now involved with vaccine campaigns, or now being involved at working on family islands and different things. We did not.
So why not just get more people involved? I don't understand.
I absolutely agree with you, which is why I was
so simple.
I was hopeful because I know the Minister of Health did, in his remarks, I think at the last press conference, note that they were training persons, because we realized that there was a deficit. There was
One second there, Dr. Butler, we have a call. Caller, you're on the air. I just don't want them to hold too long. Caller, are you still with us? Oh, we didn't lose them. Caller, are you there?
Yes. Good night, Dr. Arch. How are you doing?
Hi. Good night. How are you, sir?
And your guest? I'm not doing too well. You know, everybody's feeling the pinch of the, like you said, there's no health care. There's only the cemetery and the jail left, right?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I hate to say that, but the lady sounds like she works in the hospital, right?
Yeah, she's a consultant with PHA. She is also the president of the Consultant Physicians Association. So,
but there seems to be a problem with that. They gave you this number to make clinical appointments, right? But you could see. I saw a private doctor, but the thing is, I'm concerned at the lack of innovations. And I love what this young lady. I don't know if I'm older than her, but I'm 57. But what I'm saying is, the fact that, it's so much to talk about that's not being discussed. And so the fact that the Food and Drug Administration approved a vaccine is not the holy grail, because, there are a lot of retracted pharmaceutical drugs that will have lawsuit against them, and they could just go and look in the archives and see that. Also, we know that they're in bed with the FDA, with the WHO, FDA and CDC, all of them in bed with Big Pharma, because the Big Pharma fund the studies. But what I really want to get on is the Bohemian people first, right? Because I'm looking at the lack of innovations as far as Inogen You know, these oxygen contracts with these cylinders, still back in the dark ages, walking around with these big green cylinders, when we are exposed to global television networks and global information, everything is fake news. For the ignorant, they get confused. Now, the situation is the fact that once you are intubated concerning COVID-19, right, and we could juxtapose the data with obesity playing a role, right? So it's 80% chance that you would die, right? So you only have a 20% chance of survival. Now, the fact that there are other forms of, they call them augmented respiratory technology, right? Without putting the patient to sleep, without the invasive procedure of intubations. So anyone can just go look up the advantages and disadvantages of intubations. So even in the States, the data shows that once a person is intubated, there's very less likely that they would survive. And so, you know, notwithstanding that COVID-19 exists and I see it's rampant, right? But the thing is, I'm afraid with something you said, clinged something to my mind, Dr. Z, because you had as far as the autopsies, right? So it would be the PCR test to determine COVID-19 contributed to death, which cause of death. And so the fact that they're not, the public and nobody could access the cycle threshold at which they determine positivity, which has a lot to do with infectivity, as coming out of Dr. Fauci out in the pundits as far as the cycle threshold. So when I hear people discuss the PCR test without discussing cycle threshold, I'm vexed. And the fact that I've said a lot of things as far as the antigenic shift and the vaccinations and the efficacy and all that, relative risk reduction, absolute risk reduction, you see the need for scientific journalists. And so what I'm learning, right, Dr. D, is we know that viruses are millions of years old and are familiar with us, right? And so the fact that they want to come in like maybe 140 years, 130 years, I think, and then they got a better look at it after the pandemic with the invention of the electronic microscope. So during
the
1918 pandemic, they didn't even know it was a virus. They thought it was Haemophilus influenzae, right? Mm-hmm. So we've been feeding disinformation about the immune system. They're just learning about the immune system, and they know that escapeology is within immunology. And so we're being duped, and we're going to be in a viral merry-go-round because the lack of knowledge to the public about the antibody system and T-cell immunity, and they're preying on us, and God help us all. I really wanted to say a bit more, Dr. D, but the fact that at the time when a lot of these doctors were in school, the ideal of escapeology was not even in their minds. So it was discovered in the 1980s, and thank God the doctors discovered it. All right? So there's something called T-cell clonal exhaustion, where the immune system is exposed to antigens for prolonged periods of time. And you know, as a matter of fact, last week, Dr. D, you responded to something I said, but I felt as if some of those doctors were lost. You know, the fact that they say they know it all, and they're very limited, and the liberty and knowledge and their concepts, they're not listening to any person, which in they're taking a notice of the person instead of the message. And I've been mentioning things about the efficacy of the vaccine and still getting sick after the vaccine, viral immune escape, all of these concepts. I used to call it disease enhancement, which is all that entails escapology. All right? So we're being duped because of our lack of knowledge, and I'm very sorry for us because the truth is being spoken, and it appears to be fake news, so they're confounded. Have a good night.
You said a lot in there, caller. I get the basis that you realize. I think the key to this is that as scientists, we have to acknowledge that we don't know everything. This is a new thing that's come about. I think that's where we would get a different feel with the public in terms of having to go back and forth with things. So we acknowledge that we are all learning kind of in this. There's some basic information that we can kind of depend on. And then there's some things that are happening in real time. And I think that's the key, because I think what's happening is a lot of people are saying, you know, these are what it is, having all the data. And so it's confusing the lay people. And I think that we should just take a step back from all of this, just kind of look at where we are, where we need to maybe adjust and take another look at the data that's coming about. I think a lot of fear, and I try to be the calming portion of things. So with my patients, the first thing I do is try to get them calm, because there's so much that's going on, and this is usually not how medicine is done. Usually all of us have come to some kind of consensus. We've looked at the data, there's been analysis, and then things come out into the public after it's all kind of settled. This is the first time that we're all kind of moving through the motion of what it looks like to find the truth. And it's scary. And there are people that are dying, and nationalism as well. And there's a lot of misinformation on both sides of this thing. And so I think we need to take a more logical and proactive approach, and rather than absolutes. I know he talked about a lot, Dr. Pinder.
So he did speak about a lot. And so obviously he has a lot of things that are going on, a lot of thought processes. So certainly someone that I think would benefit, and as I think our general population perhaps benefit from other educational campaigns to discuss some of these things. Certainly there are more experts in the field than I am on yes. certain matters. And I'm definitely not the expert in infectious disease for that matter. But I do think that it's important for us, something that's happening, for us to be able to speak calmly about things and to appreciate different perspectives. I think that is absolutely important. I think sometimes when we do not allow that, we also cause apprehension. We also cause persons' anxieties to be further heightened because, again, we're not addressing the concerns that they have, which may be valid. And I think that's yeah. very important. And so certainly, you know, I always encourage everyone to take that stand. If persons ask you questions, you can only answer as best as you can. And because we don't have all the answers, you know, someone said to me the other day, suppose we're a part of the Tuskegee study. And I said, well, you know what? In years to come, we will be in the history books. I don't know. We don't have all the answers. And you know, so we can only trust that God
yeah.
was all knowing. He has designed a purpose for being here. And so, you know, and again, you know, I often remind people, even when we have other medications come out, just as simple as Panadol, there are persons that were the tests. They were the testers, okay? It may not have been us, and I think for Bahamians as well, too. We generally tend to sit back a lot before we try new things with whatever it is. And so I get it as well that when it now seems that you're a part of that test group, your anxiety as well is going to be heightened because, you know, 10 years from now, we don't know. 20 years yeah. from now, we don't know. I do know that right now we are in the height of a pandemic. I do know that right now our hospitals are over full with patients. I do know that we have people who are dying from COVID. I do know that we have people with, fortunately, from what the data has shown us so far, a lot of those persons are unvaccinated here. And perhaps it could be a part of the fact that we haven't vaccinated a large group of our
population. I think that's a key component of it. So I looked at the data. There was someone who was sending around some infographs and different things. I looked at the data and the time period that they're looking at. And really up until recently, less than, I think only about 7% of the population or less had been vaccinated. And so we're just really getting into the timeline where we're seeing a ramping up because we didn't have adequate supply. So we're now seeing, and I think it's going to take a few months, as we saw in Israel, which is one of the most vaccinated countries, even with a high vaccination point, they are realizing that they are still dealing with COVID surges, and they are on their third booster, parts of America on their third. So the information is still very early. We're only about 14% in at this point in time. So you would almost have expected that early data to be mostly unvaccinated because nobody was really vaccinated. And so we're going to be watching what's happening. And that's why I think that it's important to that it remains a choice because people have to decide what risks they're willing to take, whether it be dealing with their natural immunity. We don't talk a lot about people who were infected already with COVID and how they play a role in all of this. And then versus getting vaccinated. So you're going to have people who are going to run to be vaccinated. You're going to be some people who are going to be hesitant. And then you're going to have some people who just going to say, you know what, I'm going to opt out of this. And I think if we take the approach knowing that that is basically how it's going to be, people will be less pressured. They will feel more comfortable. They will do their research. They'll step after. And I think we'll have a better kind of relationship with our patients in that particular way. That this is serious, and we all have to take our health, some of the responsibility for our own health.
Well, absolutely, because I mean, at the end of the day, you are ultimately responsible for the management of your health. The physician is there to guide you, as are the other members of the healthcare team. And so you would have to look at the information that is given to you, look at what is happening in country, and make the best decision for you. Again, I do support that persons who are ready and have had those discussions and see the importance of getting vaccinated, because there are options that you avail yourself to it, because we do have various options. That because those options are available and we're not only just having one, there are other options for persons to look at. So I think that, you know, it's just a matter of you being able to have that discussion, make sure that you're prepared with whatever choice that you make for yourself and your family. But certainly I think that it's something that goes along with the management of COVID. It's not the end all and be all. And I think for me, that's the take home from it. It's available, but it's not the end all and be all.
It's a tool that we absolutely that people have created to try to stem this, because we don't expect people to do nothing. We are human beings. We want to live and we want to survive. And so innovation has always been our way out of a lot of situations, for sure. So I think, you know, that is the key. And I think, looking at our culture and our people, the way, in a way that is culturally appropriate for them,
absolutely,
in order to really get to them and be able to educate people in that particular way. So if you want to join in with us, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We're going to wrap up at 8:50, only because you know, the producer has to get home. I forget, there's still curfew. I'm sorry, producer, we're keeping you out very late tonight. Please let him through. He's the media. So we don't want any officers giving him any particular problems. But we covered a lot of stuff. I think, you know, as we see, there is so much going on right now in terms of healthcare. I think one of the key things that we kind of knocked on is that there is more than just COVID. People's mental health, as well as other illnesses, are going on. And it's just a strain to the entire community. What are some of the key things, as we start to wrap up, that you really want people to get out of this and to remember? And what do you want the ministry to hear? Because if they're not engaging with you the way that you want, what things do you really want them to note or to do?
You know, so first of all, again, thank you for having me on your show, Dr. Archer Cartwright. I appreciate what you're doing. I think it's important for us to talk about health and other things in the country. And certainly as we are dealing with this COVID pandemic, you know, which I think all of us would like better ended, but it's not ending right now. Certainly from what we're seeing, we perhaps may be in the thick of things for a while. And so, you know, we want to encourage everyone to please, you know, do your best. I know it's tiring sometimes, but please do your best to try to protect yourselves and your family members as much as possible, your neighbors. Because see, again, with this COVID virus, you could potentially impact anyone, just a stranger that you meet who was, you know, perhaps pumping your gas, the person at the grocery store, by your interaction. So it's really something that all of us have to consider when we talk about the things we do to help to mitigate the spread, you know, wearing our masks. You know, don't look at it as, you know, someone reminds you, you know, like they're trying to be a nuisance. No, it's for your benefit and for theirs. Washing your hands, Making sure you please avoid those gatherings. I can't say that more now than ever, especially because we know we're going into an election. I don't know that this was a thing going on right now, because we know that other countries we've seen when they've had elections, their numbers have increased.
Well, I'll tell you, in the United States, with this whole thing of being, you know, that initial thing of being vaccinated and not transmitting COVID, they had Lollapalooza, 100,000 people. New York just had a concert the other day. And so, I'm expecting that there's going to be a rise. So I think, you know, I've already seen, I was driving around the other day, I won't say which party and where it was, but there was already quite a bit of gathering and gallivanting that was going on.
And that's unfortunate. You know, that's why I tell people, we as a people have to take responsibility, okay? We have to take responsibility. We know what we do. You know, sometimes people say, well, why we have to put certain things in place? Because unfortunately, we are not a society who are able to behave ourselves on our own. We don't manage things well unless we have guidelines. We'll still see just how far we could push that rope, even though we know that it could hurt us in the end. We're not thinking about it at the moment. And
I think with our people, Dr. Pinder, though, I think they need a roadmap. And I think this is where planning and execution has always been problematic for those in higher authority. Growing, because I think that this is going to become endemic, and learning to live with COVID, I think we're going to have to put parameters in place so that people know exactly how they're able to engage without completely cutting their lives off. And I think if we put that in place, rather than just leaving people to maybe sew their own devices in a sense, but just giving people to say, hey, you're going to have a concert, you're going to have, you know, people separated. It's not going to be the type maybe it was before, but it's going to have to be where you have things spaced out and stuff. You've been very, very good at being rolled out, and so that people can go back to somewhat normalcy in a sense. I think if we take that approach, because I know Bahamians want to go back to normal.
Absolutely.
Would you get, if you keep it too tight, and you're just going to break loose.
But I think that, so Dr. Right, we have been, a lot of Bahamians have been behaving as if it's business as usual. And that's perhaps what gets us into trouble. We don't police our own selves well. And that's what I would really encourage all of us to do. Just police your own self. You know, you might not have had a family member who died yet or had to access care at the hospital. But guess what? From what we're seeing now, it's going to come. It is coming. Every day, there are people who are dying. Every day, we're getting calls from people who need help. So it is coming. With what's happening, things are going to get worse before they get better. And that is really a concern for us in healthcare, because we're already beyond capacity. And so what is that going to mean? We're not going to be able to take people who need the care. That is the reality.
So we are just like out of time. But I want to thank you, Dr. Pinder Butler, for coming out tonight and speaking with the public and letting us know some of the woes, some of the things that are actually happening, so people have a better understanding of what's happening in the country and why it's happening. I think it's important that we have communication from all levels and that we take our health into consideration. So people, before you go, I just want you to know, optimize your health. Reach out to your physician. Find out what you can do to put yourself in a better position overall. Vaccinated, unvaccinated, still talk to your doctor. Come in and get that advice so that you're not a part of the statistics. And at the end of the day, you are not going to do well with this. They're going to die and have problems. And so we all have to work as a team. I think if we work together in this crisis, that we will be a lot better. Thank you, Dr. Pinder Butler, for coming out tonight.
Thank you, Jan.
This is The Doctor's In with Dr. D. Archer, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. We will see you all next week, Tuesday, at the same time and the same place, Guardian Radio. Thank you all for listening. Good night.
PediaSure, the number one brand recommended by pediatricians, now has 33% less sugar compared to previous formula and provides 25 vitamins and minerals and 7 grams of protein kids need for a healthy growth. It's a convenient meal or snack with a delicious kids-approved taste they'll love. PediaSure. nutrition to help kids grow. Ask your pediatrician about PediaSure today.